Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special 3-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, it's almost right. We've got Lisa Wolf. That's 50%, or maybe it's almost like 80%. We've got Dave Plyer to help me out tonight. That's I can't right. do it without you. So happy to have you with me tonight.
Same here.
We are going to remind everybody we have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. Make sure to like us. We have our schedule posted on Facebook. You can see all the shows we're playing tonight if you weren't listening to a word Dave was saying. And we have some fun facts and some photos. Check it out. We have a text in line, 312-981-7200. It's also our call-in line. And what are we going to start with tonight, Dave?
Well, three great shows, but first we're going to crack the code, sponsored by Cat's Pride.
You were so close. It's crack the quote.
Crack the quote.
So close. The movie is The Godfather.
Okay.
And the prize will be a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers. So we are going to ask for the fourth caller, and we'll be back after this commercial break.
All right.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Oh.
Welcome back to our Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. We have Chris on the line. Hey, Chris. Chris, where's Chris?
Chris is right there. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Excellent. So glad you're with us. The movie is The Godfather. You know how to play the game. I'm going to give you three quotes. One of them is actually from The Godfather. Two of them are not. Your job is to tell me which one is, and then we'll ask Dave and see if he agrees with you.
Okay. All right.
Gotcha.
Either way, you are a winner no matter what.
We're going to win this, Chris. Come on.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Chris, number one, the heart of a father is the masterpiece of nature. Number two, my father is the most powerful man there is. Number three, my father's no different than any other powerful man.
Ooh, man.
I know. I don't make it easy for you.
That's a tough one, Chris.
What do you think?
I think number two.
Number two, my father's the most powerful man there is. What do you think, Dave?
I am thinking it might be number three.
Number three is my father's no different than any other powerful man. All right, Shantae, give us the answer.
My father's no different than any other powerful man.
Look at you.
Dave, you got it right. We can't fool Dave. Chris, it doesn't matter because you get to win. Anyways, you have won a desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. So you are a winner. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing and for starting off our show tonight.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Lisa. Hey, Lisa, just so you know, I'm the guy from Midway that always texts you.
Oh, Chris from Midway, of course. Thank you. You know I love texting, so thank you for calling in, too.
All right, hang on to the line, Chris. Hang on, Shantae, I'll get to you. All right, thanks, buddy. All right, there we go. All right, what else?
All right, so let's get right into that radio show.
All right, let's do this. So this is Suspense, and this is my favorite series of them all, and there's hundreds of these, and this is The Game. Great story about two kids, bottle game of Russian roulette. So we'll take that now. Suspense from 1955, The Game.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, the story of two young men and a frightening dare. We call it The Game. So now, starring Sam Edwards and Gil Stratton Jr., here is tonight's suspense play, The Game. There were two of them. They stood on the corner of Main and Elm, leaning back against the wall, indolent. The summer sun warm, bringing to them the astringent odor of soft tar in the cracks of the sidewalk. It was 2 o'clock by the hands of the jeweler's clock a few doors down the street. And it was at 2 o'clock, quite innocently at first, that the dreadful game began.
What do you want to do, Penn?
I don't know. You?
No, I don't know.
I guess we could have a couple of games of ping pong. You got the dough? $0.40. We could, Red. I don't know. Nah, I don't feel like it.
Okay.
Hey, we could shoot some pool.
What's the matter? You always want to play games. Kid stuff. Know something?
What?
I feel like getting drunk.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
You're kidding. What do you want to get drunk for?
For fun.
Some fun.
My folks won't be back till later tonight.
Mm-mm. Not me, boy. Not me.
I can get hold of a bottle.
Not me, boy.
Chicken?
That's me.
Okay, so long.
Hey, Red. Wait a minute. You kidding? What do you want to do that for?
You got any better ideas what to do?
No, but...
Okay, I'll see you.
You know what would happen if they ever found out?
They won't find out. You can stay over at my house tonight. Call your folks and nobody will know.
That's crazy.
No, it isn't. Don't you ever want to do something different? We're not kids. Maybe you are. Maybe you need a couple of drinks to grow up.
Big man, I'm 2 weeks older than you.
Not up here, boy, not up here.
Nuts to you.
And they walked slowly, carrying the idea to a white house with gray trim. A house well lived in, empty now, but waiting. And the boys went in, upstairs, and to a room papered with ships and pennants, signs and maps. The one, Red, disappeared for a few minutes. The other tried to become interested in a book of fighting ships. He was afraid of what was to come, knowing why and not quite knowing.
That your father's?
No, the gardener hid it in the woodshed. I found it a couple of weeks ago, hid it somewhere else. Boy, I bet that fractured. How do you like it?
I don't care.
Straight?
Sure.
Water chaser?
What about you?
No water for me.
Same thing, then.
Sit down. We'll talk.
They drank, and they didn't like it. But they'd started the game, and they couldn't stop. A small clock with an owl front piece ticked above them, the eyes of the bird metronomically switching from side to side. A car passed occasionally, and there was a tension until the sound of tire and engine faded away. It didn't take too long for the warmth to grow and the eyes to become hot, the tongue loose.
Thanks.
Boy, not bad, huh? Feel pretty good?
Yeah. Pretty good.
Boy. Elaine. Wouldn't be bad having her up here now, huh?
Yeah. Wouldn't be bad.
You ever take her out?
A couple of times, I guess.
All right, huh? Nick?
No, not much.
Oh, I thought you two were like that. That's what I heard last term.
You kidding?
You know what's the matter with you, Penn?
What?
You're soft. I'm your friend, boy. I can tell you what the other guys say. Think. You know? Guts, boy. Not all there. Not enough. I'm your friend, Penny. I like you. But you gotta have guts.
I've got guts.
Not enough. And that's what all the guys think. Penn's okay, but kind of soft, you know? Chicken.
Yeah?
I'm telling you. I don't want to be a pal or a guy who's soft. You got to be hard. Be like the other guys.
Well, how do you figure all this? Nobody asked you. I know what I am. I know. I'm not soft, not chicken.
You're afraid to get drunk with me.
I'm getting drunk with you.
Because you're afraid I'd think you were chicken, that's why. That's why.
You're crazy.
I've seen you afraid, Penny. I had to explain it to the guys.
When? When?
That time we went shooting ducks with your old man's shotgun. You were chicken then.
You're crazy.
The guys thought you were. Afraid of the gun.
That's not chicken.
That's what I told them. But I'm not sure.
Let's forget it.
Uh-uh. You can't run out on that, boy. I'm your friend, Penn. I'm telling you for your own good.
Okay, okay, you've told me. I'm chicken, no guts. Forget it.
Afraid of a gun. You and me could never go hunting up in the mountains, I'll tell you that.
Cut it out.
You're a kid. You're chicken.
You want to fight? Is that what you want? You want to? Because if you
what
do,
I... for? That doesn't mean anything. Kid stuff. I got a better idea. You want to really do something that'll show, boy? That'll really show it?
Do what?
Play a game. You like games. Real easy game to learn. Nothing to it. Here, have a drink. Sit down.
Game?
Mm-hmm. I read about it a while back. Russian roulette.
Never heard of it. Some kind of gambling?
I'll tell you. It's real easy. First, you get a gun. A revolver, Penny. Bullet gun.
So what?
You take one bullet, and you leave it in the gun, see? Then we take turns.
What kind of a crazy game is that?
We take turns pointing at our heads and pulling the trigger. If nothing happens to you, I take the gun, spin the cylinder, and point it at my head and shoot.
You call that a game?
Sure. See which one goes chicken first. You never know where the bullet is, and if you spin the cylinder and the bullet comes up on your turn, bluey.
That's nuts.
Well, in this book, it went on a long time. Then one guy got like you'd get. He was chicken and he folded up.
Listen, I'm sick of hearing you say that. I'm sick of it, you hear? You want to know something? You'd get chicken before me. You!
Oh, I wouldn't do it to you, Penn. Don't worry. It wouldn't be fair. Forget it.
Wait a minute now. You started this, so go ahead and finish it. Your old man got a gun? Has he?
Sure.
Okay. You want to be crazy? Okay. Go ahead. Get the gun. Go ahead. Well, go on. Get it. Let's start playing.
Red smiled a smile of pity. With deliberate ease, he sauntered from the room. Pin might have seen him stagger a moment as he reached the door, but Pin wasn't looking. He was noticing, for the first time, his hands lying flattened on the table, disassociated. And there was a scar on the right index finger. He'd got it when he cut himself 12 years before on his first borrowed scout knife. Now, the scar, a memory on a trigger finger. He didn't look up again until Red came back with the gun.
38. That's the best gun. Want to hold it?
No.
I figured you wouldn't. It's okay. We'll forget it.
Mm-mm. Go ahead. Take out the bullets.
Okay. Take out five, leave one, huh, Penny?
Yeah. Take out five, leave one.
One bullet. For you or for me. Okay?
Okay.
The gun. The gun rested muzzle to the wall. In the center of the table bearing scratches made by a 3-year-old in a forgotten moment of high experience. The boys sat opposite each other looking down at the gun. And the gun waited.
You want to go first?
Doesn't make any difference.
Me either.
Flip a coin.
Okay. Call.
Heads. Okay. I'll take the first shot.
All right, it's Dave Plyer in for Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf here on the WGN Radio Theater. I feel terrible that Carl was fired. That's just really terrible that it was his last show last week.
I know,
week.
It's too bad, but
he should never take liquor out of Dean Richards' desk drawer. And that's what happened.
It's not a good idea. Yeah, but you're Jen. Here, so, you know, Jen. We'll just move forward.
No, Carl's out on a little vacation. He's actually, is he attending the Oscars or is he just hanging out
at
West?
No, he's just on a business trip.
All right,
Just gone for the weekend. He will be back next weekend. So
lovely.
We'll miss him and then he'll be back.
Yeah. No, he has not been terminated yet. But anyway, so the suspense episode that we're listening to, the game. All right, so this is John Daner, who's the narrator to this whole thing. He was in like 260 films. I was just doing some research on this guy, and he was a radio DJ, disc jockey. He was in a news team that won a Peabody Award. But here's the coolest thing: this guy was an animator for Disney's Fantasia and Bambi. Pretty versatile guy.
You know, suspense always had the greatest actors.
Yeah.
John Daner was one of them.
And really, you know what? This is the other thing, too. Since the Oscars are tomorrow, thinking about this, you know, movie stars do not like doing television unless it's like a Netflix or an Amazon. But they love doing old-time radio. These movie stars wanted to be on these shows, right?
I don't blame them. I would have wanted to be on them, too.
Yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
And we locked Carl up in the parking lot. He's not coming in.
He's texting, telling us everything we're doing wrong, but we don't listen.
That's nice. Nice to be critiqued on the first night doing this. Yeah, it's Dave Plyer for Carl. Yeah, it's Dave and Carl. It's Dave and Lisa.
It's Dave and Carl.
Yeah, it's Dave and Lisa hanging out. And we're going to be doing part two of the suspense, the game, with John Daner. I love suspense. Still my favorite. And then coming up in the next hour is Fibber McGee and Molly and the man from Homicide. And, you know, Fibber McGee and Molly, I was looking at this. They were on the air in 1924 until 1959. That's a long time.
It's a long time. That was beyond when television actually, you know, made its come beginnings.
And I know that Jim Jordan, I think, died in the late 80s, but Marion was gone like a year or two after the show ended.
Mm.
She was gone already. Kind of like the whole George Burns, Gracie Allen thing a little bit there, but very cool. All right, we're going to get to part two of Suspense, the Game with John Daner.
There was a ceremony to the game then. Sportsmanship with the toss of a coin, a drink of whiskey, the glass put down, and next to come, the lifting of the gun. Pin stared at it and thought how he could best reach out to take the handle, gracefully, practically. He had never held a revolver in his life.
I've got to spin the cylinder?
Yeah. No, the other way. Now.
What's the odds the bullet comes up when I shoot?
I don't know. 1 in 6, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
He was a careful boy, and so he didn't put the muzzle to his head immediately. At this point of the game, there was a numbness which did not allow for speculation of pain, mother, father. Rather, he was surprised by the weight of the gun, the physical oneness with it lying in his hand. He was afraid of it and fascinated in his fear. Red watched, his mouth open a little, eyes reddened with drinking, but bright, watchful, seeing the friend of his youth slowly raise the gun, unsteady, and awkwardly turning the barrel to his head. He wet his lips and waited.
Didn't go off.
No. How'd it feel, Pin?
I don't know.
Were you scared?
I guess so. I don't know.
You sure looked scared. Real white. I didn't think you'd do it. You took long enough.
You're doing a lot of talking. You scared? It's your turn.
Give me the gun. Boy, that's a real gun. Remember when we were kids? Cap pistols. Bet you never thought we'd be doing this.
No.
Okay. My turn. Where are you, baby? Where are you? You want to make a side bet on this one?
Who's going to pay me if you lose?
Watch, Ben. When you make up your mind to do it quick, see? Like this. Now, you sweat it out. Pretty good game, huh? I'll make you one bet, though.
What's that?
You crack before I do.
You're nuts.
A buck? A buck?
Sure. A buck.
The game had taken another turn. It presented an added incentive to win. A dollar bet that one boy would be a coward. A boy would lose his nerve, wouldn't have the guts to take another chance at blowing his brains out. Good bet, that. The room was too warm. And outside, the middle afternoon sun blazed down hot on the heavy sycamore trees, dusty and still. A 12-year-old passed by on the street, whistling tunelessly, on his way to the drugstore for a soda.
Go ahead. Or do you want to quit now?
I'll do it. Don't worry. I'm not quitting.
Boy, I'll say this for you. A guy who's as scared of guns as you, you're doing all right. It gets tougher now, though. It's all in the luck, you know. You lucky, Penn?
Yeah. I'm lucky.
That's good. Maybe you need another drink, huh?
No. No, I don't want any more.
Okay. Well?
Red?
What's the idea, huh? What are you pointing it at me for?
You scared?
No, I'm not scared.
Maybe we should play it this way for a while. I shoot at you and you shoot at me.
That's not the game.
Why not? Same thing.
No. That'd be like murder. You want to play, you play it right.
Who says the way we've been playing is right?
Oh, I get it. You're trying to get out of taking your next shot.
I'm asking you, who says the way we're playing is right?
Listen, will you quit pointing it at me?
What difference does it make? Just tell me that.
It's the difference. We're playing Russian roulette. That's the difference. If you want to quit, say so.
I'm not quitting.
Okay, then. Take your shot.
It was a thing to be well considered on the part of Red. The present abstract quality of self-destruction was one thing. But a gun pointed at him, gun held in another hand, this was not a game of his choosing, and he would have no part of it. Suddenly he knew himself to be sober, terribly sober. And because of this and the fact that the game had mushroomed beyond his understanding, there was no stopping the play. He knew that Pin was sober too. And as from a great distance, he saw his friend raise the gun, but steadily this time, pressure whitening the index finger, the muzzle touching just at a pulsing vein he had noticed in Pin's temple.
You're a lucky guy.
Yeah.
I'm lucky, too.
You better be.
My turn now. My turn. Why didn't he quit? He's never had guts. Why didn't he quit? Maybe he's so drunk he hasn't got the sense. No, he's not drunk. Why didn't he quit? It's my turn. I gotta do it. He'd tell everyone if I didn't. He'd tell them all and they'd laugh. I don't know. It feels like the bullet might be coming up. Not yet, then. Not yet. I gotta smile like I was enjoying it. This'll be something to tell our kids, huh, Pen?
Yeah, sure will. How long are you gonna take?
What's the matter, make you nervous?
Why should I be nervous? It's your shot.
Okay, then, shut up, huh?
He's scared. Red's scared. He doesn't want to do it. I'm not the only one. All this big talk. He's no more than me. All that big talk. Look at him. He's scared.
It was at that moment that Pin discovered this truth, that he knew he wanted to, he could quit the game. And as he looked at Red, he became aware of a great anger. It had no direction, no apparent reason, but it filled him and made him strong.
Let's quit, Red.
You're crazy.
I want to quit.
Nuts to you. It's my shot.
I don't care. We're quitting.
You quit when it's your shot. I'll take care of myself.
I'm telling you, Red. Put the gun down.
Drop dead.
Put it down.
You're chicken. Yeah?
You better answer the phone.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mom. Oh, fine. No, I'm with Penn. No, I'm fine. Oh, out of breath. We've been playing. Kind of rough, I guess. Oh, sure, Mom. Everything's fine. Okay. Okay, Mom. Sure, Mom. So long.
Red stood by the telephone for a long time, and he cried as he hadn't cried for a long time. Pin stayed in the room. He felt it too, in his throat, the thickness, the tight-held tears. Neither boy knew what it was or why. And then after a while, it was calm again. Red came back in.
That was Mom.
Oh?
She said we could go to the tavern for dinner if you like. Charge it.
That'd be okay, Red. Swell.
Yeah. Guess we better clean up, huh?
Guess we better.
They cleaned up, not saying much to each other. They felt very close and were not able to express their closeness. Then there was a last thing to do and the last part of the game to be played. They had to know. So they walked to the edge of the town into a shallow ravine. Red took the gun from his pocket. He still had the shot. He'd never fired it himself. He aimed at a half-burned tree stump some 30 yards away and slowly began to squeeze the trigger.
Suspense, in which Sam Edwards and Gil Stratton Jr. starred in tonight's presentation of The Game. Next Tuesday, the story of a rehearsal and the performance of murder. We call it The Cellar. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who wrote tonight's play. The music was composed by Leith Stevens and Lucian Morrowick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast was Mr. John Daner. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Well, it's the WGN Radio Network, but, you know, are you coming back next Tuesday for Suspense?
Yes, we will all be back next Tuesday.
Patty won't be on that night. It'll
be
another episode
of Suspense. We're hoping that every day is WGN Radio Theater Day here at WGN.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. That's nice. That was Suspense from March 15, 1955 was the game with John Daner. In the next hour, we've got Fibber, McGee, and Molly. We'll do that next on 720 WGN.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Dave, I have an exciting interview this week.
Yeah.
It's with Louis Anderson.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I know you watch Baskets.
Baskets, yeah.
He is going to be performing here in Skokie at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts next Sunday, March 11th. He's got a one-man stand-up comedy show.
That's cool.
Of course, I will be there.
You
can get tickets at northshorecenter.org. I will do an interview with him on Wednesday. We're going to talk all about, and he's authored three books.
Yeah.
Of course, he's a stand-up comedian, and then he won an Emmy Award for his supporting actor in a comedy series for his role as Christine Baskets.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
What a wonderful
Don't forget
role.
The Family Feud.
Yes, Revival.
That's right.
So you can look forward to that interview. It will be posted on WGN Radio's social media.
I forget it's him in Baskets because he plays a mom. He plays, Louis Anderson plays a woman, and it's unbelievable to see him. He does an amazing job because you said he won an Emmy for this last year, right?
He did, and he says that this role is based on the character of his own mom.
Yeah.
And he does not play it over the top. This isn't just a silly, dramatic thing. We actually buy it.
That's cool.
So I can look forward to that, and I'm excited to have that opportunity.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. There are some texters calling in asking where Carl is. He's in prison.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's had a little tax evasion.
We are not letting him. There's no bail until Monday.
Yeah.
So
but it's really nice of you to help him out. I know you've got the money all
Oh, I do have the money. Oh, yeah. It's not being delivered till Monday morning, but that's okay.
But it's nice of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So we got Fibber, McGee, and Molly coming up, and The Man from Homicide, and the Oscars tomorrow night.
Yes.
Big deal. Yep.
And the eve of the Oscars, which is today, are the Razzie Awards, which is the Golden Raspberry Awards, which honors the worst films of the year.
Yeah.
So we are going to be talking about those as well, because it's kind of fun to talk about the bad films just as much as the good films.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you know what the worst picture was?
No.
It was the Emoji Movie.
Oh, I could see that. When I saw that animated thing, the kids were
Did you see it?
No, they wanted to see
not.
It. And I was like, it looks
not
terrible.
Okay.
And Dean didn't like it either. So he's my guide.
All right. Well, if he didn't like it, I'm sure it's... Okay, what about worst actress?
Ooh, actress.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I don't know, for this year? For what? Who is it?
Well, this is Tyler Perry.
Oh, was she
Boo
Madea?
Boo, too. A Madea Halloween. Yeah,
Was
Madea.
Okay.
Worst actor. You knew this one.
It was Tom Cruise. And,
right.
But which is the
it's
movie?
It's The Mummy.
The Mummy. Okay.
Interesting, right?
I saw another movie of his on a plane when I was traveling a couple weeks ago, a recent one, and it wasn't fabulous. Like, is he only going to be known now for these Mission Impossibles? Because there's
Although
one
anything
coming.
You watch on a plane, it's never as good.
No.
You know, it just doesn't have the same.
No, it doesn't.
Worst supporting actor. Mel Gibson, Daddy's Home 2.
I did see a little of that on cable, and it was an awful movie.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the movies that was also up for Worst Picture, not sure, and Worst Supporting Actress.
No, I don't know.
It's Kim Basinger from 50 Shades Darker, which was,
she was
also.
In that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw the first 50 Shades, and so I have no interest in seeing the second or the third.
Has she had some work done?
She, you know, and
I'm
Carl.
Assuming.
I think
and
they have the same surgeon.
Carl Amari is having some work.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. This is hour two. This is show 262. We've got Dave Plyer in for Carl Amari, who
everybody.
Is... Where is he, Dave?
He's in the West Coast right now, and we've made up so many lies about this guy.
Yeah,
last
we
hour.
Can't keep track. Is he
but
in
he
prison? Is he getting
done.
A nip and a
he's,
tuck?
He's getting his eyes done.
He's getting a few
vain.
Things done.
Yeah, he's getting his
eyes
done.
He's exactly. a little needy. He's getting he's getting stretched as well. He was about 5'8 before. He's going to come back 6 feet tall.
Yeah, he's getting stretched. Oh, nice. He's getting
about
lifts.
6 feet tall when he gets back.
I did tell him to go visit, because it's Oscar weekend, to go visit Musso and Frank's, which is this classic, cool steakhouse on Hollywood Boulevard.
And
so
he said he would, although it's a busy weekend, and I know he's got some work to do around there.
Yeah.
He will be back next weekend. So if you like Dave, enjoy him this weekend. If you don't, he'll be out at the end of the weekend.
I'll be done. I'll be done Sunday night.
Either way, all good. This hour, we've got Fibber McGee and Molly from October 9th, 1945, buying a new used car with Jim and Marion Jordan.
This is a Johnson's Wax thing, is that what you think?
Probably. Yeah. That was their sponsor.
All right. Okay. All right. But we've also got Crack the Quote, sponsored by Cat's Pride.
Lisa. The movie is The Dark Knight, and the prize will be Desktop Indoor Weather Station, brought to you by American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling.
Are you just taking all the stuff off of Manfredini's desk?
Do I do that?
Manfredini's desk.
Yeah, I just like to steal everything when he's not looking.
I like that. All right. Okay,
so
cool.
What caller would you like to do?
Let's do seventh caller. I'm a seventh caller guy. Yeah.
All right. Let's take the seventh caller. We'll be right back after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All
lovely.
Right, lovely. We've got Jim on the line. Hey, Jim.
Oh, let me get Jim on the line
here. Jim?
That was my fault. I wasn't paying attention.
I figured it was your fault.
Hey, Jim, what's happening, buddy?
It's Tim, but hi, how are you?
Oh, Tim, I'm sorry.
What's
so
going
close.
On, Tim?
Just a letter.
Thanks for joining us.
Where are you from?
Yeah. I live in DeMott, Indiana. I work in Chicago.
Oh, terrific. We're glad you called in, and we're going to play a little Crack the Quote. This is from The Dark Knight. I will give you three quotes. Only one of them is actually from the movie. We'll see how you do, okay?
Gonna be fun.
It's always fun. Okay, quote number one. Mm-hmm. The night is darkest just before the dawn. Number two, without the dark, we'd never see the stars. And number three, there was never a night or a problem that would defeat me.
Ooh. Ooh. Damn, right? What do you think, man?
Now let's go with two.
Number two, without the dark, we'd never see the stars. What do you think, Dave?
I'm thinking it's three.
You got it? Number
I'm
three.
Going with number
there was
three
never
again.
A night or a problem that could defeat me. Okay, Shantae, let's see which one it is.
The night is darkest just before the dawn.
All right, so I got you both. That was number one.
Ah!
But you were both so close.
Tim, we suck.
You were just one off. You know, that's the thing. But you are.
No. I was closer.
You were, you were.
You
closer.
Are absolutely
from a numerical
right.
perspective. You were very close. Yes.
I'm gonna go with that, and because of that, you are a winner, and you've won the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. So congratulations, and thanks a lot for calling in. We appreciate you.
Oh, thank you very much. I love listening to your station.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks,
take
Tim.
Care.
Hang on, Shantae is going to get your information. All right, buddy. All right, here we go. All right, so coming up, we've got Fibber McGee and Molly from October 9th, 1945. The McGees are shopping for a new car, and they have their eyes on a snappy green sedan. And Jim Jordan, Marion Jordan, Harlow Wilcox. And this is cool because I love these two. I love Bea Benaderet from the Burns and Allen. She was Petticoat Junction.
She does so much.
She was...
Radio.
Was she Wilma? Flintstone? I think she was Wilma.
B. Benaderet, yeah.
Yeah, she was Wilma. And Gail Gordon, Mr. Moody.
Right, of course.
Who I just love. So here is, from 1945, Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber, McGee, and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. We'd like to introduce to you two well-known pedestrians who have just decided to become motorists. Yes, the folks at 79 Wistful Vista have made up their minds to buy a new car. As new as you can get one now, anyway. And here, looking over the want ads, we find Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Well, what's in the papers, Daddy?
Lots of wonderful cars being advertised. Cadillacs, Lincolns, Packards, Apperson Jackrabbits.
Hey, here's an interesting one.
Read it in your well-modulated voice.
It says, 1939 coupe by school teacher with leather rumble seat, knee action and custom-built body.
Is she a blonde or brunette? Or does she have a convertible top?
Don't say.
How much is it?
Don't say that either. It just says, bring an honest face.
Oh. Well, that'll be easy. You can take me.
Mm-hmm. Say, here's an ad that looks good, Molly. Bantams for sale.
Oh, I've always wanted one of those little cars. Mm-hmm. How much are they?
Hens, $3. Rooster. Oh, no. I'm on the wrong page. This is live car.
Look, dearie, why don't we just go downtown and prowl through the used car lot?
Not a bad idea, Snooky. I like to walk around poking the upholstery and kicking the tires.
Anybody who would kick a tire these days is taking his life in his feet. Besides, it isn't...
Come in.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, my dear. And a curt nod of recognition to you, pickled puss.
Well, vaccinate my goldfish if it isn't the old belly thumper himself. What's new in the world of medicine, witch doctor, as if you'd know?
I see where Mayor Latrivia has appointed you health commissioner, doctor. Congratulations.
Thank you, Molly. After squawking my head off for 20 years about sanitary conditions in this town, I am now in a position where I have to do something about it or shut my big fat mouth.
You ain't yodeling the Indian love call there, Bonebender. When do you take office?
January 1st. Why?
I just wondered how much longer it'd be safe for us to drink our city water. Make a note of that, Molly. The first of the year, we start using bottled water.
Don't be insulting, dearie. I'm sure Dr. Gamble will be a wonderful health commissioner.
Among them city hall vultures, he'll just be a boob in the woods. Them ward healers will hamstring him so he can't prescribe an aspirin tablet without a referendum.
On the contrary, my boy, I will have the freest hand of any health commissioner in history.
Why, doctor?
Due to my high ethical standards, my dear, I hesitate to use the word blackmail. Hmm? But Alderman McClutchie would find it difficult to explain why I had to remove a pearl earring from his larynx when his wife does not wear earrings. And City Treasurer Fink might not care to have it bruited about that he broke his leg leaping out the second-story window of a gambling joint. I am not quoting actual names, you understand, but you get the idea. Yes, I think the lads will treat the new commissioner with considerable courtesy.
Doc, I've underrated you.
Thank you. I underrate you, too.
Gee, thanks. You're not just saying that because you admire me.
Yes, I am, and now I think I'd better be going. I have a delicate operation waiting for me at the hospital.
Something real fancy, eh, Doc?
Yes, I have to tell one of our wealthier patients to get up and go home. His hangover has progressed from the amusing to the obnoxious. Goodbye, Molly. See you later, loose lip, I'm afraid.
Isn't he a sweet old character?
He's an insulting old curmudgeon. Hey, what's a curmudgeon?
Search me, dearie. I know what a cur is, but I wouldn't know about mudgeons. Hadn't we better be going downtown look for a car?
Yeah, I guess we better had. You all ready?
Well, I will be just as soon as I put my face on. Mm-hmm. Now, you lock the door.
Okay, I'll get everything down here. Ah, there goes a good kid. She knows buying a car these days is pretty chancy, and she knows what a bum driver I am. But is she worried? Scared stiff. Is she going to let me know she's scared? No siree. Not till 20 seconds after I stick that key in the ignition. Why, George, if she... Come in.
Hi, mister.
Well, slice me down the middle and call me Slim. If it isn't little Teeny.
Yeah.
Hi, Teeny.
Hi. What you doing, mister? What you doing? Watcha?
Well, sis, I and Mrs. McGee are about to go car buying. Mommy and Poppy shoppy for a jalopy.
Gee, that's dandy, mister. Why don't you get a car that the top goes up and down on it and buy it while the top is down? Why don't you?
Well, now, there must be some glimmering of sense behind that idea, sis, but I don't seem to get it. Why should I buy a car that the top down?
No ceiling. that was a joke.
Yeah. If I ever want to saw my way out of a radio program, sis, I'll borrow your gag file. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Hey, mister, what kind of a car are you going to buy? My daddy has a cab.
Not only has, he is. Frankly, Jeannie, we don't know exactly what we want as yet. We're going to romp through a few used car lots and take a gander at the situation.
Huh?
What do you think of the Stanley Steamer?
Well,
I might go for a station wagon if I can find a good bargain.
Oh, my daddy doesn't like station wagons. You know why?
No, why?
It's because he doesn't like police dogs.
Oh, I see. Have I got my pajamas on, sis?
No. Oh,
that's good. I was afraid I was dreaming this whole conversation. Tell me, Madam Interlocutor, why doesn't your daddy like station wagons because he hates police dogs?
Well, he had a station wagon once, and somebody told him a station wagon didn't look good unless it had a police dog in it.
Uh-huh.
So he got a police dog, and it sat in the front seat with him.
Uh-huh.
And a cop stopped him one day when he was going too fast.
Uh-huh.
And he asked my daddy why he didn't let his friend drive because he looked more intelligent than my daddy.
Well, I've seen your old daddy. And I've seen police dogs, and I'm inclined to agree with the...
Stop! I will not listen.
Okay.
My daddy is a good, kind man. Oh. And he's always given me a quarter for a soda. I will not stand here and listen to unkind remarks about him.
Well, I've given you plenty of quarters for sodas myself, yes.
Not lately, I bet you.
Okay. Okay, here's a quarter. Means I'll have to buy a cheaper car, but who cares?
Oh, gee. Thank you, mister. Now then, what were you saying about my daddy?
I said he looks like a police dog.
I know it.
And he's a stuck-up snob in the second place.
Isn't he, though?
He thinks because he's cashier in a bank that anybody worth less than $200,000 is a hobo.
You hit the nail on the head that time,
mister. And he's the only guy in town that wears a gardenia. I hate guys that wear gardenias. And furthermore...
That's all, mister. That's all. That's two bits worth. Goodbye now.
Oh, man, that's Fibber McGee and Molly, and that is, by the way, Bea Benaderet, whose voice that was Betty.
Exactly, Betty
Rubble.
Betty Rubble. Betty Rubble.
Messed that up.
Yeah. Well, you
I knew she was one.
So close.
She was...
It was the Flintstones.
It was the
know?
Flintstones. That's right. That's right. All right, so that's Fibber McGee and Molly, part one from 1945, and there's more when we come back on 720 WGN. All right, so Oscars tonight. You excited about that?
Yeah, well, I think I'll be working here because
yes, you will.
I will be driving over and listening in my car.
Yeah, you know, and I've got an event going on tomorrow night, so I'll be watching that on tape delay as well. But okay, so we're listening to this Fibber McGee and Molly from 1945. What do you think best picture in the 1940s, 1945 would have been?
Oh, I thought we were talking about the best pictures that are up for
we could do that. We can
no,
do that
no,
minute,
that's
yeah.
Okay. I won't know. I know a little bit more about
going
now than I can
way.
Tell you that, but you tell me.
It was Going My Way. And
did you see that?
I did for the first time this Christmas, and I watched it with our pastor. Because he said, he goes, isn't there a priest Christmas movie that's out there? I'm like, yeah, we could try that one. So it was Going My Way. And then best actor was Bing Crosby for that movie. And then best actress was Ingrid Bergman for Gaslight.
Oh, that's a great movie.
But there was a couple other movies that Going My Way beat out. Mm-hmm. Double Indemnity, I know that one. Gaslight, Since You Went Away, I don't know that one.
Don't know.
And Wilson. Which, anytime I hear Wilson, I still think of the soccer ball.
It's printed on
from
everyone.
Castaway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Oscars tonight. What have you seen?
I just watched Three Billboards last night because Nick DiGilio was telling us every weekend, watch Three Billboards, watch it. So I finally watched it. You know, Martin McDonagh wrote that, and he actually is a playwright, which is how I know him.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
He wrote the play The Beauty Queen of Lanon, which is opening at Northlight Theater in 2 weeks from now, which
that's cool.
Of course I will be seeing. So I'm a big Martin McDonagh fan, and I thought, well, I can't miss the movie, and it was all that I had hoped and expected it would be.
Dean, I think that was one of Dean's picks, and I have to
I'm pretty sure it's one of everyone's picks.
It was Three Billboards
outside,
and
yeah,
And I can't remember the other
one. Lady Bird was great.
It was.
I'm a big Laurie Metcalf fan.
Yes,
and
you
so,
are.
And she's a big Steppenwolf original ensemble member. So I, you know, feel a
yes, thank you for that. So I'm trying
spirit.
To get her. I'm trying to get her on the in the show in the next.
Well, you
weeks
just
for
dropped.
Roseanne.
You just dropped my name.
I did.
And I'm
I did.
Sure
they're moving.
Help you out.
No, they are. They're moving. No, they're moving along on that interview. No, that
I'm
helps.
I'm so glad. I'm
that helps.
So glad.
No, that helps. So it's Call Me by Your Name, which I haven't seen. Darkest Hour I've seen, which is fabulous. There's got to be a lot of great. Costume Oscars for that. For
I didn't see it. We've got The Shape of Water.
Yeah, Shape of Water. Dunkirk.
Right.
Get Out. Lady Bird, as you mentioned. Phantom Thread. The Post. Shape of Water and Three Billboards. There's too many.
I know.
Now.
Carl thinks it's going to be good Dunkirk. I did not see that. Not really my kind of movie.
I did.
I don't know. You saw it. What'd you think?
Yeah. It took a while to get into the concept of how the filmmaker made the film.
Yeah.
It's a very unusual format. But once you figure it out, it was a tremendous movie. I've also seen Three Billboards.
Yep.
I got to go with Three Billboards.
I do,
yeah,
too.
I
do, too. What
one.
About Makeup and Hair, Roger?
About which
Roger
one?
Roger Badish joining us,
makeup
by the way.
Makeup and Hair?
Makeup and Hair.
Oh, Makeup and Hair. I haven't seen enough of the movies.
Okay, but let me tell you, Darkest Hour.
Well, first of all,
yeah.
Makeup and Hair, I think I have more hair than you. But
you do.
And I need a lot of makeup.
In your ears, you do.
Yeah, I know.
Victoria and Abdul, Wonder and Darkest Hour. I have to think it's going to be Darkest Hour.
For
a lot of period costumes,
stuff,
but
yeah,
if you're going to,
yeah,
if you do Darkest Hour, you got to consider Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Exact same time frame, exact same
I
clothes.
I don't feel qualified to make a determination on makeup and hair. Okay. I just don't know if I have that.
What was the other choices, the other than Darkest Hour?
Oh,
what
he
were
closed
the
it up already.
Oh, you closed it up.
It was Victoria and somebody.
Roger making trouble up there.
When don't I?
It is a Wonder, Victoria and Abdul, and Darkest Hour.
I know Wonder is a modern day film. Mm-hmm. I don't know that second
about,
one.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that one either.
Yeah.
I don't.
We need the movie gurus to help us out.
Yeah.
So Kimmel is hosting tonight.
Yes.
And,
for the second time.
Yes. And I love Jimmy Kimmel. I really do.
Have you seen one of the promos? I saw he's done several of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I saw last night or earlier this evening.
Yeah.
He says, and the correct envelope is.
Yeah. Well, Faye Dunaway.
I love that one.
Faye Dunaway, they're presenting again.
Yeah.
Yes.
This picture, which will be interesting. Bill Leff sent me a text on Friday that he was presenting with Faye Dunaway.
I think that would be great.
Yeah. But with Kimmel hosting. So, you know, when we watched the Grammys, I don't know, a month ago or whatever it was, it was so political. And it
was.
Is really the best concert of the year to watch the Grammys. And it turned me off. And I know ratings were down because of that. I'm thinking, with the Oscars, it couldn't get any more political than
they're going to be wearing orange pins, which is, have you heard about that? The orange pins, they are like a, you know, against gun violence. And so that's going to be the political statement that they're focusing on.
And there's some Me Too in there, too. I know there's some Me Too happening, which I'm okay with both. But
this is the newest thing, the orange pin.
Yeah. But I'd like to, you know, I hate to say it. I know this is a forum and I know they've got the stage and there's, you know, whatever, tens of millions of people that are going to be watching this. But I kind of just want to enjoy the event and it just is a little interruptive to me.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. It's Dave Blyer and Lisa Wolf tonight on the WGN Radio Theater. And we're going to get back to the second part of Fibber, McGee, and Molly from October 9th, 1945. Buying a new used car.
Hey, this is a pretty good-looking assortment of cars.
Oh, look, McGee, that's awfully cheap for that beautiful car, isn't it?
Where?
That one right there.
Huh?
It says Packard 120.
Ooh.
Isn't that quite a bargain?
That ain't the price, Mommy. That's the name of the car.
How do you do, sir? Good day, madam.
How do you do, I'm sure.
You the mastermind in this rattletrap roundup, bud?
I am, sir. My name is Stanley Stutz.
I'll bet you're a bear cat of a salesman, Stan.
Yeah.
Did you get it, Molly? Stutz? Bear cat? You see, there used to be a car.
It ain't funny, McGee.
It ain't?
No, sir, it ain't. I mean, it isn't. It's a common delusion, sir, that jokes referring to a person's name are excruciatingly funny.
Yeah?
But they are usually painfully repetitious to the subject. Your bearcat witticism is exceedingly threadbare, so far as I'm concerned.
Well, I bet it is at that. You owe the gentleman an apology, McGee.
She's right, bearcat. I apologize.
Well, that's quite all right, sir. Now then, may I show you something?
Yes, what?
I mean, did you wish to see some of our stock?
You betcha, Bearcat. You mind if I call you Bear? You know, short for Bearcat.
No, not at all, sir. You mind if I call you Pole?
No. Now, now, boys, let's get to business.
How about that green sedan over there, Stan, old man? That looks in pretty good shape.
Oh, that car's not for sale, sir. Now, over here, we have a splendid little car, a late model seven-cylinder Dillingham. Good rubber, new battery.
Did you say seven cylinders?
Yes, madam.
What became of the other cylinder?
What other cylinder?
Isn't it supposed to have eight?
Oh, no, madam. This is a six-cylinder car. We added an extra cylinder ourselves as a special premium.
Oh, I see.
Well, I will say, Mr. Strode.
Stutz.
Excuse me. I will say, Mr. Stutz, that all your cars look beautiful.
Yeah. Must keep a guy around here just to clean them up for you, bud.
Oh, we do.
Yes, so.
Oh, that lad over there takes great pride in them. Oh, I say, boy, did you polish that new Lincoln we just got in?
Yes, Mr. Stutz. Looks beautiful, too, after that Johnson's car new treatment.
Something wrong, Pope?
No, no, not a thing. In fact, everything is very much as usual.
That, the fellow you just spoke to, Stan, is he, the new boy around here?
Yes, yes, he wandered in this morning.
Uh-huh.
I asked him if he was in the market for a car, and he said no, he just had a morbid interest in dusty, dirty cars.
I see.
You know him?
I've seen him someplace.
Tell the truth, McGee, we see him every place. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Wilcox!
Well, hello there, Molly. Hello, pal. Oh, you know Mr. and Mrs. McGee, Mr. Stutz?
Sufficiently, I think.
What you doing here, Junior, which is the silliest question of the week?
Oh, you know how I am, pal. When I see a dingy-looking automobile, I've got to get out to Johnson's Carnew and show the world how easy it is to transform it into a showroom model. The way Carnew cleans and polishes at one swell swoop.
Fell swoop, Mr. Wilcox.
Oh, cleans and polishes at one swell fell swoop is amazing. You see, you just apply a little Carnew, let it dry, and wipe it off. For a proud and lazy car owner, it's the answer to his prayers. So, when I passed this used car lot this morning, I just had to move in and do my stuff.
Yeah.
You see, as an expert on Johnson's Carnew...
Just a minute, son. These people and I were discussing business. Why don't you go back to work like a good lad?
Yes, sir, Mr. Stutz. See you later, folks.
Good day, Mr. Wilcox.
So long, Waxy. Well, you got a good boy there, Stutzy.
Yeah, I hope you can keep him.
Well, I rather doubt it. He's only paying me $5 a day to let him polish these cars. Well, back to business, folks. Now, this Hudson Roadster over
here... Now, wait a minute, Cy. That green sedan in the back there is just the
now,
kind of
Mr.
a...
Mr. McGee, I thought I'd made it clear that that green sedan is not for sale.
You wouldn't be holding out on us, would you, Stan, old horse?
No, sir. It is merely that it lacks equipment for delivery. Now, you take this car here, Mr. McGee. It's only been driven 12,000 miles. It belonged to an elderly lady who used it only to do her marketing.
Well, she must have been a quaint old character. She left a package of chewing tobacco in the front seat.
Well,
and there's a street map of Honolulu sticking out of the glove compartment. What was she marketing for, ukuleles?
Well, she was, Oh, excuse me a minute. I hear my telephone. You
something.
Just look around all you like, folks, and I'll
be... Hey, why do you suppose he doesn't want to sell us that green sedan, McGee?
That's easy. He's holding it for a friend. But by George, if he thinks for 1 minute that he could...
Wait a minute, dearie. There goes Mrs. Carstairs. Huh? Yoo-hoo, Mrs. Carstairs. Yoo-hoo.
Nah. Why didn't you let her go on past? She gets under my skin like a tattooed dragon.
Well, my goodness, suppose she does act a little like a coquettish dray horse. She's a fine woman. Well, imagine meeting you down here, Mrs. Carstairs.
Oh, how do you do, my dear? Are you alone? Oh. Well, I see you're approximately alone. Good day, Mr. McGee.
Hi, Carsty. I'm surprised to see you up and around today.
Why, Mr. McGee?
Well, judging by the newspapers, that must have been quite a wingding you flung at your mansion last night.
The wingding, as you so vulgarly express it, Mr. McGee, was in honor of Sir Humphrey Ramsbottom, the British consul, and his daughter, Lady Murgatroyd.
Oh.
The affair was notable for its complete dignity, and I regret that the newspapers reported it for the derision of the hoi polloi.
The what, Mrs. Carstairs?
The hoi polloi, my dear, a Greek word meaning the masses.
Oh, you speak Greek, Carsty?
Yes.
Oh, say something in Greek for us, Mrs. Carstairs.
Hoi polloi.
Thanks.
Are you by any chance purchasing a car?
You betcha, Carstairs. Why?
Well, then perhaps I might make a suggestion.
Why, of course, Mrs. Carstairs.
Then do, by all means, get a motor car which has a sufficiently long speaking tube between the tonneau and the chauffeur's seat. I find it quite a strain to lean forward so much, telling Jeffers to look out for that truck!
Where?
What truck?
I don't...
I was talking to Jeffers.
Oh. Yeah, I see. Well, maybe we can get a chauffeur with longer ears.
I tell you, McGee will see that we get a good car, all right, Mrs. Carstairs. He's a wonderful mechanic. Knows all about cars.
Really?
You betcha, Carstairs. Now, you take this little coupe right here. This kind of car has always had one definite weakness. The horn gets stuck. 9 times out of 10, you just touch it like this, and it... you see what I mean? Sticks!
Please, McGee, don't do that. Shut it off.
I can't shut it off. It's stuck.
I think I know what to do, Mr. McGee.
What, Carstairs? What?
What would you do, Mrs. Carstairs?
I would go away. Good day, my dear.
Hey, stuck! Hey, stuck! Come fix this thing! Hey! Back. Now, looky here, Bearcut. Let's quit the stalling.
Stalling, sir?
He means, why don't you sell us the green sedan in the back there?
I've tried to explain, madam, that car is not in a saleable condition. It is not for sale.
Holding it for a friend, eh, Stutz?
I assure you I wouldn't sell that car to my best friend. Now, look, Mr. McGee, will you please consider this 1941 Chevrolet? It's in excellent condition, and I... Oh, I'm sorry, folks. My telephone again. You will excuse
Certainly.
Me.
Certainly.
Well, Natch, take your time, Bearcat. We got all day. You know, Molly, there's something fishy about him not wanting us to have that green sedan.
Well, maybe he does want us to have it. Maybe he's just trying to get us excited about it by pretending it's not for sale.
Say,
well,
I'll...
my goodness, what are you folks doing here?
Well, Mayor Latrivia, how nice.
Hi, Latrivia. How's it feel to be a weak old civilian?
How did you mean that, McGee? A week old civilian or a civilian of a week's duration?
You meant how does it feel to be out of the Coast Guard, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
To be frank, Molly, if I ever set foot on another deck, it will be because I walked through a pinochle game. And when I smell powder again, it will be on the swan-like neck of some lovely woman. Some lovely civilian woman. On a dance floor which I have not scrubbed 5 times that day myself.
What was your rank, Latrivia?
Chief gunner's mate.
How wonderful. And who was the gunner?
Who was what gunner, Mrs. McGee?
The gunner that you were the mate of.
I was not the mate of a gunner. I myself was the gunner's mate.
Yes, but what gunner's mate?
Any gunner's mate.
Now, that's a kind of a haphazard system, ain't it, Latrivia? If a gunner can pick any mate he wants...
But he can't!
Yes, but you said that...
Look! In the Navy, the word mate means a subordinate officer having no rank, but taking precedence over enlisted men.
I thought you enlisted yourself.
I did.
Then if you were a mate, you took precedence over yourself.
Of course I did. I mean, no, certainly not. That is, I was not...
I can see why you never got to be an admiral, Latrivia. You're too easy confused.
I am not confused. Let me explain.
Please do.
Very well. Now then. I joined the Coast Guard as an apprentice seaman.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was made a first-class seaman. Mm-hmm. Then I was promoted to gunner's mate third class.
Third class, eh? You skipped the first two classes.
I did not skip the first two classes. Second class and first class come after third class.
Don't be silly, Mr. Mayor. When I was in school...
This has nothing to do with school, Mr. Mayor. A petty officer in the Navy.
Now, just because you're a little irritated, Latrivia, that don't give you the right to disparage the officers of our Navy. Some of them may be petty, but by George...
I didn't say the officer. I said the petty officer. The third classy officer. I mean the third class petty mate. A gunner's rank. Now look! A gunner's mate is a... Oh, it's wonderful to be home again.
Well,
And do you know what you've done for me?
What, Mr. Mayor?
You have made me realize what it means to be mayor of a city like Wistful Vista. Until now, the responsibility has really worried me. But no more.
What do you mean, kid?
Why, when I think that I am the civic leader of thousands and thousands of people who are probably just as dumb as you or dumber, I realize my job isn't so tough. Thank you, citizen.
Good day, Molly.
Goodbye, Mr. Mayor.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. He sure gets worked up, don't he, Molly? He was just livid with rage.
You mean livid, dearie?
Go on, livid is a girl's name, like Livid de Havilland.
That's Olivia.
Oh, don't kid me, Snooky. Olivia is a country in South America.
That's Bolivia.
Oh, yeah? Well, then what does... Oh, hi, Bearcat. You ready to do business?
Yes, Mr. McGee, and I think this Chevrolet here is just...
Now, just a minute, Mr. Bearstuck. We want to know about this green sedan over here.
Yeah, why are you so anxious to keep us from buying that? The best-looking car in the place. Look at them perfect tires. Look at the finish and the upholstery. That's the car we want, Stutz.
Please, Mr. McGee, that car was the last model off the assembly line after war was declared. It is not complete.
We don't care. We want it.
But it doesn't have any...
Windshield wipers? So what? We can buy those ourselves.
I didn't mean that. I was referring to the...
I know, fog lights, but we don't care anything about those details, Mr. Bearcat.
Will you please let me tell you, that car hasn't got a...
Rear bumper? So what? I never learned how to back up anyway. Come on, bud. Come on. How much?
I'm warning you, Mr. McGee.
How much?
It wouldn't be fair to me if...
Quit stalling, Cy. How much?
$350. Uh-huh. But believe me...
No.
Yes, sir. Here's the cash, Bearcat. Give me a receipt before you back down again.
Oh, very well. There you are. Bill of sale and the title certificate will take a little longer.
Oh, isn't this a beautiful car, McGee, and all ours?
Yeah, for $350.
Yeah,
too.
Let's drive it around the block and see how it runs.
Okay. Well... Where's the ignition keys, bud?
You won't need any.
Huh?
No, I told you this was the last car off the assembly line after Pearl Harbor.
So what?
So there's no motor in it.
No!
No motor!
Oh, this is ridiculous.
In nearly every field, there's one product that stands out above all others as the accepted favorite, and usually with good reason. Among no-rubbing floor polishes, that favorite is, of course, Johnson's Glow Coat. From coast to coast, it way outsells all other no-rubbing polishes. That certainly is evidence of a product superiority, the test of continued use on millions of floors. Yes, there are reasons. Glow Coat not only saves you work because it's self-polishing, it not only gives you maximum floor beauty and adds greatly to the life of your linoleum, rubber, composition, and finished wood floors, it's perfectly blended so that it never streaks, is never uneven. Its quality is completely uniform, and you can count on every single package giving you the same satisfaction. That's why the demand for Johnson's self-polishing glow coat increases from year to year.
Ladies and gentlemen, the real test of patriotism comes after the bands have stopped playing and the guns have stopped shooting.
Well, the guns have stopped shooting, folks, but our men are still in there pitching until they are returned to civil life. It's to them we owe victory, and it's to them we owe the recreational care and maintenance of morale until they do get home.
The agency which takes care of this is the National War Fund. And when you are called on to subscribe, give generously. We gave our boys a warm hand when they left. Let's not give them the cold shoulder now.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Maybe I'll try to get Harlow Wilcox on my show.
Oh, we talk about Harlow all the time. And what about a snappy green sedan? Do you ever have a green car?
I had a green Pinto.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, unfortunately. Oh. That was Fibber McGee and Molly from October 9th, 1945. It's Dave Plyer and for Carl and, of course, Lisa Wolf. And we'll be right back after this on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. That was hour two of our show. We have a few minutes. We're going to be doing a true or false quiz on this year's Oscar nominations. But before that,
yeah, I hope I have my Oscar stuff ready to go here.
Your Oscar stuff? What's your Oscar stuff?
Well, I don't know.
What, you got a costume or something? What are you talking about?
I'm not good at the trivia, the deep trivia stuff, but let's give it a shot.
Well, luckily we have some listeners who might be good.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, the first question is true or false. So you got a 50-50 shot. Okay.
All right.
True or false? The Shape of Water is the most nominated film for the 2018 Oscars.
I'm going to say yes on that one.
You are right. With 13 nominations, it is the film that competes in the most categories, followed by...
Three Billboards?
Nope.
No.
Followed by Dunkirk, which has eight nominations.
It was Dunkirk.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Number two, true or false, Logan is nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
I'm going to say false.
You are right again. Yeah, it's nominated to Best Adapted Screenplay.
Okay. All right.
So
it's technicality.
Yep. So close. True or false, I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's Sufjan Stevens.
Okay.
I don't want to mispronounce it. He's nominated for Best Original Song for Visions of Gideon in Call Me By Your Name.
I'm going to say yes, because I feel like I heard that name.
I am so sorry.
No?
He wrote two songs for the film, Vision of Gideon and Mystery of Love,
nominated.
The latter of which is nominated for an Oscar. Just Mystery of Love.
So I remember his name.
Okay.
I got his name.
So you're going to pronounce it for me?
No.
Okay, me neither.
But they all performed tonight, right? I mean, all the nominees for the music, they all.
Yeah, so maybe we'll learn his name tonight.
All right.
Okay. True or false, Meryl Streep is in the running for an Academy Award this year?
No. Am I wrong?
Try again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's been nominated for her role as Katherine Graham in The Post.
Oh, man. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
she was the boss in The Post.
Yep. All
that was a great movie. Did you see that one?
I didn't, but it's on my list of things to do.
That was another airplane movie. That was another airplane movie for me. All right.
True or false? Before this year, no woman had been nominated for the Best Director category since 2010.
I'm going to say that's probably a yes.
It is true.
Because that's... on people's radars right now.
That is true. Yeah. Catherine Bigelow was nominated for and won Best Director for The Hurt Locker. Since then, no woman had been nominated for the award until 2018 when Greta Gerwig was among the Best Director nominees for... What movie?
Yeah,
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Okay. You know, I know they... they've changed the rules a little bit, of course, on making sure there's diversity in all this.
Yep.
Which I get, which I totally get, but like, don't you give the award to the best person and the best nominees?
So it's truly a debate.
Yeah, I just don't get that. That to me is like every kid getting an award when they're in last place playing soccer, basketball, football. You know, I taught my kids you shouldn't.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Tough lesson.
Okay.
True or false?
Yeah.
This is the second time that Saoirse Ronan has been nominated for an Oscar. She was in Lady Bird.
Yeah. Second time?
That's the question. This is
I'm
going to
say
time.
No.
No is right.
Okay.
Wrong. While only 23 years old, the actress has actually received three Oscar nominations.
Wow.
Yeah.
What were the other movies?
She was in Atonement in 2007, Brooklyn in 2016, and then, of course, Lady Bird in 2018.
That surprises me. She's a young actress. That's great. Good for her.
She is young and great.
And her name is?
It's Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
Now, I'm sure we'll be seeing more of her.
Yeah, I guess so.
True or false, The Shape of Water received nominations in all four acting categories.
Yes, true.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Ah,
almost.
Jeez.
Almost. But not true.
Okay.
I'll give you one more question.
Okay.
True or false, if she wins this year, it will be the first time actress Frances McDormand takes home an Oscar.
She's been nominated. I don't know if she's won. That's a tough one. You want me to answer?
Yeah, I do.
I'll say that she's won before.
Yeah, where have you been?
I've been editing stuff over there.
Right. You are right.
Stuff to do.
You're right, Roger. The actress won her first and only Oscar in Fargo, 1997.
But she won in Fargo, right?
She did.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so that's. I have more questions. You want
some
more?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah,
sure,
you better be careful there, Mr. Plyer.
Let's do
you
two
may
more.
Lose your pop culture license.
You know what, though? I'm not, but you know this about me.
Yeah.
I'm a movie, I love movies, but I don't get that deep into them because I feel like we have so... many people. I mean, Dean being the number one guy, but then Nick does it.
Nick does his.
It's out of our wheelhouse. This is just all
you got.
Fun.
Roper on Rose show. I just feel like the movies are well than covered here, so I don't really get into that.
Just,
all right, let's do another.
It's not
one.
Our job.
Yeah,
true or false?
Yeah.
This year, Christopher Nolan received his first nomination ever as Best Director for Dunkirk.
Sure.
Yes, you are. Okay. You are right. Right. I'll give you one more question. Last question. Okay, true
Roger.
Or false?
All right.
All right, Roger, this one's for you.
Yeah.
Star.
Me and my big
I'll make it a nice hard one for you. Star Wars The Last Jedi soundtrack is nominated for an Oscar. True or false?
Oh, and I didn't even look at the...
come on, it's...
Wait
you
a minute,
got a 50,
the soundtrack?
Yes, that is the question.
The best soundtrack?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say yes.
You are right.
You know what? And I mean, it has some of the most classic, you know, music from the, even the 70s is already included in that.
I want to know, while I'm doing the news, look up to see if any of the other Star Wars films were nominated for Best Soundtrack.
You know what? I'll let you do that after the news.
Thanks so much.
She's going to tell you what's going on.
It's your question. You look it up.
No, I'm good. I'm good with the answer.
All right. We got The Man from Homicide coming up from 1951. After the news...
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Good morning, everyone. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. We've got Dave Player in for Carl Amari. I think you're doing a bang-up job
here. Oh, man, stop. You're embarrassing
me. Yeah. It's great to have you here.
Yeah,
I know you'll be with us tonight as well.
Yeah.
We have a crime drama this hour called The Man from Homicide from August 20th, 1951.
Which we got some texters that don't know about the show, and we'll talk about that in a little bit after we do Crack the Quote, which is sponsored by Cat's Pride. Lisa.
Exactly. The movie for this hour is The Shawshank Redemption.
Ugh.
What a movie, right?
It was, but I'm going to fail this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so let's find a caller for this one. What number are we doing?
No, I have The Shawshank Redemption. Do we have a... Okay, well... Okay, we're going to work on that.
Oh,
anyhow,
he's just silly, isn't he?
The prize will be a Twilight Zone audio drama set.
Oh, that, cool.
Yeah, so...
10th caller?
10th caller.
Let's
sounds
do the 10th
great.
caller. 312-981-7200. We'll do that a little bit while we're are we waiting? Oh no, we're going to commercial.
No, we'll go to commercial break and we will take the 10th caller.
All right, we'll be right back at 720 WGN.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Something like a little Herb Albert, you know.
That's right. How'd you know?
I love her album. My dad had that album, the green album with the whipped cream lady on it.
I don't know. I didn't have that.
Oh, yeah, that's long before your time.
Lady?
I'm older than you.
I don't think so.
You don't remember that, Lisa?
I'm so sorry. I don't. The whipped cream lady?
Yeah, there was a lady on the cover. It was green, and she was sitting there, and she was covered in whipped cream.
What year was this? What are we talking?
70s. Oh, it was 60s? Before my time, but it was my dad's album.
I don't know the whipped cream, but it sounds 60s. Intriguing.
Roger had his first job in radio in 60s.
Actually, it was after the first.
Was it? All right.
Still in diapers.
That was his fourth job. We've got Steve on the line. Hey, Steve, where are you from? Where are you calling from?
Franklin Park.
Oh, great to hear from you.
Is this the vivacious Lisa Wolf?
Wow.
That is me.
Wow.
Although, you know, what if the real truth, who knows, right? That's what Carl calls me anyways. Although he calls me other things, too.
Sexy.
But that's the only one we can say on the air.
Okay.
All right, Steve, it's great to hear from you. This is Shawshank Redemption. One of these quotes is actually from the movie. Your job is to tell me which one. Great movie, right?
Yes, very good.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, quote number one. Being in prison is like being in a different world. Number two, every true hustler knows that you cannot hustle forever. Number three, there must be a con like me in every prison in America.
I would say number three.
There must be a con like me in every prison
you know
in
what?
America.
What I might think? Be with Steve because my number I've guessed number three every time. Steve, I'm going to go with you on this one.
I'm thinking every third time you might be right.
Yeah, every third time.
Nice. Let's hear it.
There must be a con like me in every prison in America. Oh,
my
there we
gosh.
Go.
You guys are good.
Nice work, Steve.
Morgan Freeman, right?
That is exactly right. Yeah. Morgan Freeman was amazing in that movie. Congratulations. Either way, you are a winner, and you got it right, so you're kind of like a double winner. You have won a Twilight Zone audio drama. It is produced by Carl Amari, and it's hosted by Stacey Keach, and it is full of some wonderful actors, both from Chicago and in L.A. So I hope that you love the Twilight Zone audio dramas. They are terrific.
And since Carl's not here, we're going to go through his desk and find something else
to put
in the envelope, too. You're welcome. All right, hang on, Steve. And Chantel, I'll get your information.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy. So this Man from Homicide that in people, I didn't know about the show either. So you know, the golden age of radio, they always say, you know, went through the 1940s, but the 50s, there was still radio,
yep,
old-time
radio.
This
is one of them.
This is one of them. So Man from Homicide, airing in the early 1950s, was a classic, a little more like, almost like film noir kind of movie, but it was a... kind of like a Dragnet or Broadway Is My Beat, which was another big show, but it was kind of a gritty story, seedy criminals, sordid crimes, outline of police, you know, procedures infused with some drama in there too. So it's kind of an interesting little program. And this one is called Willie Baines' Case. Wee Willie Baines has been shot in the back of the head. He's now in a slab in the morgue, and Lieutenant Dana decides to question Mr. Schuyler.
I think it's Schuyler.
But he's shot shortly after the cops arrive. So from August 20th, 1951, here is the Man from Homicide, Willie Baines' Case.
The Man from Homicide. According to Webster's Dictionary, homicide is the killing of one human being by another. According to Lieutenant Lou Dana,
it's the beginning of a dirty, dangerous job that doesn't end until the killer is found.
I don't like killers.
Every week at this time, the American Broadcasting Company brings you transcribed the star of stage and screen, Dan Duryea, as Lieutenant Lou Dana, the Man from Homicide.
The dead are lonely people. They don't eat, drink, chase blondes, or hit the night spots. Nobody keeps them company. Their quarters are on the crude side. And when they've died violently, they don't look good. When they check in with homicide, they put in their time at the morgue. I wonder if the cold marble of the slabs ever bothers them. The sergeant standing next to me had surrounded himself with 300 pounds of fat. But even that couldn't keep the cold out.
Lieutenant...
Have a stick of gum, Dave?
No, thanks.
I don't like his looks.
Wee Willie? He ain't exactly in the best of shape.
45 slug?
Yep, in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm. Somebody wanted to make very sure. When and where, Dave?
Couple of kids stumbled across him in the park around 11 o'clock tonight.
Kids? At 11?
18-year-old kids. Boy and a girl looking for a quiet place. They found a quiet place. They also found Wee Willie.
What's the medical examiner's guess as to time of death?
Around 7 tonight, give or take an hour.
Dinner time, but not for Willie. I'd seen Wee Willie. We got out of the morgue. The room I kept my desk in was warmer, but the chill was still in my bones. Dave.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
What was Willie Baines?
40 years ago, he was a kid in the slums. 10 years later, juvenile delinquent. And since then, petty larceny boy, small bookie, errand boy for the smart ones. Yesterday, the crime investigating committee had him under subpoena.
And tonight, under the sod. Who was he working for?
We're not sure, Lou.
What was the crime commission going to ask him about? The weather?
Captain Kowaleski checked through on that. One of the men on the governor's staff stuck Willie Baines' name on the list.
Well?
Yeah, but he had gone home. We'll get hold of him in the morning.
Tonight?
Lou.
Yeah?
Man's name is Schuyler. Old family and stuff.
Well, I'll make sure my fingernails are clean.
Yeah, it's late. He might be asleep.
Well, he can be waked.
He's political, Lou.
I'll try not to hold that against him. Come on. I'll tell you a secret, Dave. I've decided not to run for president. The Schuyler place avoided its neighbors by several acres of manicured lawn and a high fence. The house itself was made of gray stone, and well-trained ivy framed the windows. The front door was so highly polished you could see your face in it. I needed a shave.
Yes?
Oh, she didn't need anything. She had it all.
What do you want?
Mr. Schuyler?
It's late.
It is?
Well?
My credentials.
Lieutenant Dana. Homicide.
Homicide?
Come in. Mr. Schuyler's in his room. What did you want to see him about?
It might be simpler if I discussed it with him.
I suppose you know what you're doing.
We'll leave it at that.
But I can't understand what connection there is between homicide and...
Professional connection.
Mr. Schuyler won't be pleased at being disturbed.
Wee Willie wasn't pleased either.
Wee Willie?
A man with a priority at the moment.
Well, if it's important...
Why not let your husband decide?
My...
Where's his room? Quick.
Down the hall. Last door.
Thanks. I went down the hall, quick. The last door was standing open. Mr. Schuyler was wearing a silk dressing gown, leather bedroom slippers, and what looked like a smile on his thin lips, but wasn't. And two bullet holes in the head. An open window gave a fair view of the manicured lawns and the fence at the far end. Somebody was climbing it. He was over before my bullets got there.
No!
That fence is over 100 yards away. Shh, wait. Yeah.
Now what? Hey, Schuyler?
I'd say so.
Dead?
He's got a right with two bullet holes in his head. Dave, when you came in, did you...
Shots figured you might need me.
And did you see a woman in evening dress?
A woman, no.
Come on. Mr. Schuyler will excuse us.
Was there a woman here?
Yeah, she made light conversation with me. Maybe because she thought I was a good conversationalist, or maybe because she had to give a gunman time to shoot his gun off. I left her here.
Nobody around now.
No. She must have ducked out when you came in.
Who was she?
I called her Mrs. Schuyler. It looks like I was wrong. Get on the phone. Notify the department, Dave.
What'll I tell them?
Tell them Wee Willie's getting company. The technical men showed up and got the routine underway. They found out that the corpse was Schuyler, and they found out that the corpse was dead, and that was all. Dave and I went through the dead man's files and found nothing. Out on the lawn, the noise and the smell of gunpowder faded. He went over the fence right about here. Maybe he dropped his calling card.
There's not a thing around, Lou.
I better take a look at the fence itself. Shoot your light up here, huh?
Okay, Lieutenant.
Hold it now.
Yeah.
There's rough stone on top. He must have hit it hard going over with my bullets singing behind him. Yeah.
You got something, Lou?
Something.
Yeah. Hunk of cloth.
Half an inch by half an inch, maybe. Jagged edges. Could have been torn off his pants leg.
Yeah, hardly enough to identify, Lou.
That's for the lab to worry about. Dave, we're dead.
I'd say.
Baines was going to sing, and somebody objected to his solo and killed him. And Schuyler had picked Baines for investigation. He had something on his mind. Where's Scarlett's mind now?
Well, son, you're being rhetorical.
The girl, what's a description worth? She had nothing that'd make her different from 500,000 other girls except beauty. And that doesn't fit into her police report.
None of it's any good, Lou.
I know, Pappy. So let's feed this cloth to the lab, half an inch by half an inch. I wonder if there's enough to make a hangman's rope out of it. The lab was good. They had the cloth pattern tabbed in an hour. It was a tweed, an expensive tweed. Sketches were made up and every local mill questioned. It took them 4 hours to hit the mill that had woven the cloth. 20 minutes for a list of tailors they'd shipped bolts to in the city. By that time, it was the next day. And 12 cops pounded pavement visiting tailors. Maybe I slept while in the chair behind my desk. I must have slept because I saw the girl's face and heard her voice again. It was quite a voice.
Hey, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Pappy?
You ever try sleeping?
Sure. Didn't care for it much, though. You got something?
It's a maybe on one of the lists. Boy by the name of Stan Cochran bought a suit made out of that cloth 2 months ago.
Keep going.
Well, he's a Detroit boy. Had a little something to do with the Collier gang out there.
The question is, what's he doing in this town?
Uh-huh.
You got an address?
Yeah, Slocum Arms over on Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm. That's nice, Dave. Go find a bed and lie down.
Now, you've been gone just as long as I have.
Sure, Pappy, but I don't have so much to carry around. You're dead on your feet. I'll let you know if Mr. Cochran ripped any suits recently. Once upon a time, Van Dyke had been a nice street where people got married, had kids, and died in bed. That was a long time ago. Now, drunks and dirt, blind pigs, houses, and the Slocum Arms. A decaying palm and a cracked tub, cigar butts on the floor, and a quick turnover.
Yeah?
Stan Cochran.
Stan, who's that?
Let's see your register.
Give me a reason.
I'm crazy about hotel registers.
I don't like that reason.
How about this?
I don't like cops either.
You and me both. The register.
Okay.
Thanks. That's funny.
What is?
All your customers got the same handwriting.
Same? Oh, I can explain that.
Go ahead.
They can't write. Let me go!
Stan Cochran.
Look, I'm telling you, the name ain't for me. Look at your hands.
I'll wash him when I get home. Maybe he didn't feed you the right name. He's 28 years old, 5 feet 7 inches high, weighs around 160, brown hair, gray eyes, dresses a lot better than this dump would call for. Who is he?
Oh, I don't recognize. What's the idea?
Keep your hands away from that drawer. There might be a gun in it. Who is he?
Well, I...
Shut up. Bend over towards me. We're holding a confidential chat like that. He's on his way out. What name did he use here?
I don't know.
You gave it away. What name?
Steve Carter.
Yeah. No imagination. Same initials. Gargle when you get home. Your throat will feel better. Goodbye. Mr. Cochran was wearing a tan gabardine. I admired it walking up Van Dyke. Half a block, and Mr. Cochran decided his gabardine was worthy of better places than Van Dyke. He hired a cab. I made my car, and Mr. Cochran and I went for a drive.
All right, that is The Man from Homicide, part one of our story. And a little preview, next week or tomorrow, we're going to do, it's the Oscars. Sorry
or
about
tonight.
That. Tonight. I keep forgetting tonight now. See, I'm doing exactly what Carl does.
Yes, you are.
tonight, because of the Oscars, which I really like this, the Lux Radio Theater, you know, they used to do, movie versions or radio versions of some classic movies. So it's going to be The African Queen. So it's going to be a 2 hour,
Well, it's a 1 hour show for us,
but it'll be over
the first 2 hours of the show. And if you want to hear a little fun fact about that, go to our Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater. You can see a photo and a fun fact about this Lux Radio Theater, African Queen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool. All right. But, more from Man from Homicide after this on 720 WGN. All right. It's Dave Plyer in for Carl Amari along with Lisa Wolf here. And, we'll play part two of The Man from Homicide in, right after the news. But here's a little something since it's the Oscars tonight. This show is from 1951. Best Picture, I pulled this up, from 1951, was all about Eve.
Oh, you just pulled it up. You mean you didn't know it off the top of your head?
I did. I know. Oh,
I see. I thought you knew it all.
Betty Davis, Ann Baxter, George Sanders. Best Actor was Jose Ferrer for Cyrano. He was in Cyrano. Best Actress was Judy Holliday from Born Yesterday. But the movie All About Eve Beat Out Father of the Bride, which was a great movie with Spencer Tracy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure. That was the original one. Yeah,
yeah. King Solomon's Mines, Born Yesterday, and a huge movie at that time was Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
And it beat
that
out.
The play, of course. Wonderful.
I've seen a couple of these Oscars they've had, because they didn't televise them until the 1950s, but there was video of a lot of these because they would use them for those newsreels back then. So you can go back and look at maybe late 30s to 40s on some. It's pretty cool to see these actors and actresses having getting loaded at the table before they win.
I think that's where Carl is this weekend.
Is that what he's doing?
Yeah.
Roger, where are you?
Also, by the way, not only do we have Lux Radio Theater tonight with the African Queen, we also have Gunsmoke, which is a favorite of so many of our listeners. So we've got Gunsmoke from August 9th, 1952 with William Conrad.
That has got to be, and I don't know if anyone's ever looked into that, has got to be the longest running between radio and television.
Right, exactly.
Because I think it was the 40s when Gunsmoke started, early 40s, and then it went off the air on television in the 70s. I mean, that was a long run. That's a long
Very
run.
Very successful.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
And it's Dave Plyron for Carl and Lisa Wolf, and we're going to get back to part two of The Man from Homicide.
I parked. Mr. Cochran paid his cab off and it left. I got out of the car, and Mr. Cochran walked past the entrance to the Yarns Turbine. I ignored it, too. Mr. Cochran picked out the first alley beyond the nightclub and went down it. I gave him time and sampled the alley myself. A thin trickle of moonlight picked out garbage cans, empty milk bottles, and Mr. Cochran knocking on a door at the end of the alley. The door was solid and bolted. I decided I'd use the front entrance to the Orange Turbine. It was the kind of a place that had a cover charge. I wondered how Captain Kowaleski would feel about a cover charge. And then I had thoughts about Mr. Schuyler, and I didn't bother wondering. The head waiter had his doubts, but the place was open to the public. The table he gave me commanded a very good view of the wallpaper and the entrance to the gents' lounge. The girl playing the piano was like half a million other girls, except she happened to be beautiful. The last time I'd seen her, we were in a gray stone house, and a man was about to die. This time...
Good evening, Lieutenant Dana.
If you say so.
I'm Welsh. I own the Turbine. Hope you like it.
Oh, I'm crazy about the wallpaper.
The head waiter didn't recognize you. Now, if you'd like another table...
Ah, this one will do.
Lieutenant, I hope you're not here on business.
I wouldn't know. Who's the piano player?
Claire Mason. Beautiful, isn't she?
And she even plays the piano. I'd like to meet her.
I'll ask her.
You pay her salary, tell her.
Very well, Lieutenant.
Hello.
Mr. Welsh asked me to come.
Sit down, Miss Mason.
Thank you.
It's even later.
I beg your pardon?
Than last night.
I'm not sure.
Last night was the night we met at Mr. Schuyler's.
At Mr. Schuyler's? Who is Mr. Schuyler, Lieutenant Dana?
Oh, like that, huh?
You and I have never met before. I wouldn't have forgotten if we had.
You're very beautiful. And how did you spend last night between the hours of 11 to 1, say?
Why, I...
Don't bother. You were here all the time. How many dead men have you ever seen?
I don't think I've seen any.
That's a shame. Everybody should see at least a few.
Why?
Then maybe more people than homicide would hate killers. Welsh got an office in the club?
In the back of the building.
Now, let's go visit him.
I don't particularly want to.
Your lawyer wouldn't be happy with your unwillingness.
I don't have a lawyer.
You will by the time you get to trial. I said let's go.
I don't know what you're trying to accomplish, but... All right.
I just want Welch to tell me that you were here all last night, too.
It's through here. He'll tell you I was here.
I know he will. But once he tells me, you see, I'll have a couple of accessories. You and Welsh.
Accessories to...
Murder? That's what it always is, isn't it?
Would you mind?
Oh. I keep forgetting we first met in very high society. Sure.
Lieutenant Dana.
Yeah?
Since Welsh will corroborate my story, what's there for you?
Exercise. Look, Miss Mason, if this were a book, it might turn out that you have a wicked twin sister. Or maybe somebody hypnotized you and the game you played at the Schuyler house wasn't your fault at all. But this isn't a book. We both know where you were last night. And one of us knows exactly why. The other has a very good idea. Welch is on the other side of that door?
Yes.
You're looking at me as if I were a can of somebody's ideal dog food.
Am I?
Yes. You're wrong. I'm nobody's ideal. Not even a dog's. You sticking to your story?
It's not a story. It's the truth.
I've got just enough brains, Miss Mason, to know you're lying. I'm just enough of a fool to wish you weren't. Forget it. We go back to the script now. Keeps his door locked?
Yeah.
Go on, Miss Mason.
It's Claire, Mr. Welsh, and the lieutenant.
Oh, cute.
What do you mean?
Never mind. You know the answer to that one, too.
Come in, come in. Just doing a little bookkeeping. Make yourselves comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Welsh, where was Miss Mason at 11 o'clock last night?
Claire? Why, here at the club, of course.
And how do you know?
Well, because I was here myself.
How about 7 o'clock?
7?
That one you need a minute for. Take it.
I don't know what you mean. At 7, Claire and I were dining together.
But she told
me... We were dining together.
Oh, neat. Very neat. What restaurant?
No restaurant, Lieutenant. Claire happens to be a very fine cook, and she was kind enough to invite me to dinner at her apartment.
Then she's got more talents than one.
Why, you...
Piano playing.
Lieutenant, if you're going to be nasty...
What else can I be? Look at the company I keep. Miss Mason, you're buying one alibi from Welsh. Know what he's getting in return? Two alibis.
Two?
You know about Schuyler. You were there.
I've already told you I wasn't.
Save it. Welsh offered to pull you out of that one by saying you were here. It'd be my word against the pair of you. You took his offer. In return for that, you've given him an alibi for 7 o'clock last night.
We were together. What happened at 7 o'clock last night?
A little man named Willie Baines had part of his head shot off with a .45. Oh, that one you didn't have down in your little book, huh?
I didn't know.
Claire, the man's trying to trap you.
Shut up.
I've got my rights.
How about Willie Baines' rights? How about Schuyler's rights?
I had nothing to do with them. Remember, Dana, you're not a jury.
I remember that all the time. That's why I don't kill you. All right, Miss Mason.
I have nothing to say.
You've got lots to say. It went like this. Schuyler was down here, saw you, decided your eyes held all the stars and your lips were what a man dreams of. He also happens to be on the crime commission. He got hold of Willie Baines, and Baines decided to talk. About who? You know the answer to that one. Otherwise, you wouldn't have recognized Willie Baines' name when I threw it at you.
I still have nothing.
Let me... Baines was going to tie Welch in with the racket. Schuyler told you. You worked for Welch, you told him. Mistaken loyalty or a cut in the profits?
I work here, that's all.
Thanks. It makes it a little cleaner. You told Welch, and Welch started moving. He hired a gunman from Detroit. First, Willie Baines went at 7 o'clock. And then Schuyler at 11. You were with Schuyler at his house in evening dress. Well, maybe you didn't know the program for the evening.
I didn't.
Claire.
That was for obstructing justice, Welch.
I'm confused.
Say the phony alibis work. Where does that leave you the minute Wells stops worrying about you?
Oh, I don't care
Where does that leave you? Two dead men on your doorstep morning, noon, and night, waking and sleeping. Skyler, who loved you with two bullets in his head. Willie Baines, dead in Potter's Field.
Oh, stop! Please stop it! All right, Lieutenant.
Claire.
I was at Skyler's, you know that. You saw me. It's 7.
The lights. Claire, get down. Don't move. The boy from Detroit was around. Claire.
I don't feel good.
Let me look at... Yeah.
Don't leave me.
I'm not. It wasn't Wells. I had my eyes on him. It was a Detroit gun boy. Emergency. Lieutenant Dana. An ambulance, quick. The Orange Turban Club, back room. Take care of that and then send a patrol car over.
Lieutenant, I don't feel...
There'll be a doctor here pretty quick.
What chance... You don't have to answer that one. I know.
This isn't going to be easy. But, Miss Mason, I'm a cop from Homicide. I got a duty to perform.
What are you so worried about?
I don't like it. There's a gimmick in the law. It says... Testimony by a witness not alive at the time of trial isn't admissible unless the witness made the statement and signed it at a time when the witness knew he was dying.
Then I'll make a very good witness, won't I?
I'll write the dying declaration out. Name, Claire Mason, where do you live?
The Ardmore Hotel.
Do you now believe you're about to die?
Yes.
Have you no hope of recovery from the effects of the injury you've received?
Isn't there any...
No.
I have no hope.
I'll write the statement. You'll have to try to read it.
All right. It says what you said before.
Yes.
Give me the pen. That'll make up for Skyler and Willie.
It'll make up.
Oh, I think maybe now. Maybe now, Lieutenant.
Yeah.
The way you figured it out, I wasn't so bad, was I?
You weren't so bad.
But Lieutenant, you and I, we know, don't we? That really I was part of the...
I don't know a thing except what's on the statement.
Thanks, Lieutenant.
She thanked me, and she died. It wasn't fair. Dead, she looked even more beautiful. I got out before the ambulance and the squad car. I got out of the room and down the hallway and to the door that opened out on the alley. I was late, but not too late. Welch and the gun boy Cochran would be waiting. They had to wait. Alive, I was their executioner. Dead, they'd be safe. I killed the hallway light, slid the bolt open, kicked the door wide, and headed for the dirt on the alley pavement. I picked number one by the flares of his gun. Welch. He hadn't expected me to come through the door that low. The gun boy had been smarter.
He pulled in behind the stack of barrels he'd used as cover. We were going to have fun.
Cochran, Welch is out. It's just you and me now. Come out. No? Then I'll come after you. You got the girl. A neat job, Cochran. Real neat. Not a word, Cochran. I'm coming after you. Not like Willie Baines who tried to run. Not like Schuyler who didn't know was coming. Me, you've got to take from the front, Cochran. But to do that, you know what, Cochran? You'll have to come out yourself. Stand up to it and take a chance. How about it, gun boy? How about it, killer? All right. I'm on the other side of the barrels. I'm kicking them over, and when they go down, we'll each have a shot apiece. Fair enough, gun boy? Fair enough, killer?
No! No! I'm coming out. Here's my gun. Don't shoot. Please, Al. Please, don't shoot.
He crawled out on the dirty floor of the alley and cried. I didn't shoot him. They die harder and more often in the death cell. The boys arrived and washed the thing up. I went back to headquarters. I wrote up my report with pen and ink on white paper. I attached Miss Mason's dying declaration to my report and threw it in the outgoing basket. In due time, the district attorney would use it in a court of law, and a murderer would die. Fair enough. And Claire Mason, with the lights in her eyes and the warm lips, was dead. And would be forever dead, with all her beauty. I don't like killers.
You have just heard Dan Duryea as The Man from Homicide with Larry Dobkin as Dave. Ann Diamond was Claire, Jane Avello Welch. Music was by Basil Adlam. The Man from Homicide is transcribed, written by Lou Bittes, directed by Dwight Houser. Be with us again next week, same time over most of these same ABC stations to hear Dan Duryea as The Man from Homicide. Orville Anderson speaking. This program came to you from Hollywood. America is sold on ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
You know what's really weird is you always heard CBS and NBC on all of these old-time radio shows. You don't hear ABC, but I think it was just in the 1950s, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. All right, what are we going to do here? Are we going to do a quick break, or what do we got?
Yeah, that's good. We'll do a quick break, and then I think John Hansen and Esmeralda Leon, who are filling in for you,
I know it's so weird.
Are going to come
never,
and we'll
I've
do a little
crosstalk with people filling in for me. That'll be very interesting.
It's your baby. They'll take good care of it.